An Ash Wednesday sermon preached by Reverend Richard A. Rem at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on February 13, 2002, in the series The Grace to Let Go, entitled As Death Approaches. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 31, verses 1 through 5 and 11 through 18, and Luke 23, verses 44 through 49. Copyright Grand Valley State University. Please note that the original recording spanned two sides of a cassette tape, so there is some missing material. I will bridge the gap.
I love this service. I love its focus. I love its honesty. I love the moment of looking into your eyes and placing the ashes on your forehead with those familiar words, dust thou art and to dust thou shalt return. And I have an advantage over you. Since I have to preach in a service like this, I get to wake up in the middle of the night thinking about it and then spend all day thinking about it, thinking about this service, thinking about its theme, thinking about our mortality, the fact that we live and we shall die. I wonder how I will die. I ask that question not in a morbid sense. I ask it with genuine curiosity. I really wonder how I will die. I think I will die easily. But it's presumptuous when one is in the fullness of life and good health to predict how one finally will face death and experience that final moment. When I was a young seminarian, full of vim, vigor, and vinegar, and a lot of other stuff less good, I was a summer seminary student at a church in Holland that sponsored hymn sings on Sunday night at the Holland Civic Center. It was big. And it was on the broadcast of the local station, and I got to do the preaching once in a while. And I remember preaching on a text from Hebrews one Sunday evening, "It is appointed unto man once to die, and after that the judgment." And of course, knowing very little about the reality and experience of life, I had a lot to say. And the next day, there was a person affiliated with the seminary who took me aside and said to me, "I didn't like at all what you said on the radio last evening. My father was an elder in the church, a man of devout faith, faithful and loyal. And he experienced an awful death. He had no peace at all." And I was duly chastened, even though it was hard to receive. And I think it was a profitable admonition for me, because some 30 years later, I'm telling you about it. It has always made me very mindful of the due caution necessary when one speaks about death. And yet from this vantage point, even though I was quite taken aback at that time, at this vantage point, I think I might probe it a little further, although it was obviously a very open wound with this person. But the thing I would ask myself at least is, I wonder if that Dutch Calvinist faith in which that person had been nurtured and had served that person well. I wonder if in the Christian church, that's a larger question that comes to me often, I wonder if we have not created a monster out of death. I wonder if rather than helping people to see it as the final stage of life, we have not filled it with fear and threat, with the possibility of judgment, The fear only exacerbated by our guilt and our own recognition of how far short we have fallen from even our own ideals and our own goals and ambitions. I wonder if we haven't created a bigger problem out of death than it is. And yet, of course, it is a mystery. But I think of Luther, who suggested that the preacher should preach the law to people until they were convicted of their sins and cried out for mercy, and then preach the gospel to them in order that they might receive grace. Doesn't that sound a little bit like setting people up? Dietrich Bonhoeffer railed against that kind of thing when he was in prison in Nazi Germany. In his letters and papers from prison, he was critical of the church that had lost the battle in the modern age and all of the questions of the sciences, and therefore retreated to the last things, maintaining that it alone had the custodianship of death and the keys to the kingdom. And Bonhoeffer didn't like that because he felt that Christ ought to be served at the center of life and people ought to be called to the fullness of life rather than as a last resort holding on to the possibility of some religious devotion because of the final threat of death. So I raise those questions because I think about them often. But tonight, I want to begin a Lenten theme with you, the grace to let go. The grace to let go tonight as death approaches. But first of all, to the theme for just a moment. The grace to let go. Join me in a little physical action here. Make a tight fist. Go right ahead. Don't be afraid. Just make a tight fist. Now hit the person next to you. No, I don't mean it. Just hold that tight fist for a moment. You can feel. Can't you feel the tension? You can feel the tension, literally, physically. The tight fist. And the tight fist is, well, it's a defensive instrument, too. You can strike somebody with it. Or you can pound the desk to make a point. And as you keep that fist tight, there's a tension that goes all the way up your arm and into your shoulder. Now, let it go. Open your hand. Not limp, but open. You can feel the difference, huh? Relax. It's open. Besides that, it's a gesture of openness. It's a gesture of grace. It's a whole different way of being. And I want to suggest to you this evening and throughout these midweek services that there are two ways to live life, symbolized or signed by the clenched fist or the open hand. And what I want to have us think about together in these midweek services is the possibility of experiencing the grace to let go. The grace to let go. Because the sign really points to two different kinds of human reality. And you can apply it to a whole gamut of human experience, and we'll be doing that from week to week. In regards to our family or the pursuit of our profession or the pursuit of a passion, holding on to life with a tight grip, tense, intense, or learning to live with a grace that gives us a certain openness, a kind of freedom with which to approach the full gamut of human experience. So back to death for a moment. It is a mystery. And one really needs to be very, very careful in speaking about it publicly in a setting like this. For death comes to us so differently. It is one thing to experience it at the end of a full and rich life. It's another thing when death cuts us down in the midst of life, or God forbid, strikes life from a child. One can go suddenly, never having the chance to say goodbye. Or one can linger in an awful, agonizing death. So death is not to be treated lightly. And when I wonder whether or not in the church we haven't made more of it and created a monster of it more than it need be, in no way am I suggesting that it can be treated lightly. Death is a mystery. I've been a number of times at the side of one who breathed their last, and it is an awesome mystery to know that one moment that physical body is enlivened, and in the next moment life is gone. It's a mystery. And yet if we can think about it as that limit situation, as that final limit of life, not a curse added on to life, as would be the view if one literalized those creation stories, but rather as the limit to life, which brings a certain seriousness and even richness to the experience of life as it's lived throughout all the days. When I was in Europe a decade and a half after the trauma of the Second World War, there was a whole school of theology called existentialist theology, and one of the themes that they talked about often was they spoke about our being thrown into life, our thrownness into life, facing death, and that we could never come fully to live until we had owned our own death. I remember that was a theme that was very much a part of that existentialist theology that came out of the experience of the Second World War and all of that trauma. And I think there's something to it. Can I be free truly to live until I have been able to look into the mirror and say, I will die. I own my death. I own my mortality, granting that we are all so very different. Not only does death come differently, but we all live and experience so differently. Our chemicals are different. Our hormones are different. Our early childhood experience is different. Our life experiences are different. Is it Princess Margaret who just died of the British royal family? What a tragic life to be the beautiful sister who could not be the queen, to fall in love and not be able to marry, to give one's life then, I'm sure, in some bitterness, cynicism, and anger, to a destructive way of life that caused life to end in weakness and some despair. And so, once again, I'm guarding myself every step of the way because it is very risky to make any generalizations.
But I want to suggest this evening the possibility that one can find a grace to let go.
You weren't surprised at the lessons this evening. Jesus' word from the cross, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Words which are taken from Psalm 31, the psalmist in a conflict situation, a serious situation, crying out to God for refuge and for strength, finally committing his life, his soul, into the care of God. And Jesus doing the same. Did we hear him from the cross say those words? How could we know? Probably not. But that's not the important thing. The important thing is that's the impact of Jesus on that community. They experienced Jesus as one who had the grace to let go in death, trusting God. The impact of the way he lived and the way he died caused them to paint his portrait with those beautiful words of trust from the psalmist. Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And it's not easy. And biblical faith is not naive or superficial. For the same gospel that tells us about that moment of final commitment is the gospel that tells us about the wrestling in Gethsemane. Not my will, but thine be done. If it be possible, remove this cup from me, the anguish and the struggle. It is Luke's gospel that speaks of him praying with great drops of blood. So don't hear me say it's easy. Just hear me point to the possibility that even in that final moment, should it be a moment of anguish and deep suffering, there is the possibility of a grace of letting go. And how do you get there? I don't think you get there unless that grace has been cultivated throughout life. Unless somehow or other we learn to let that fist be pried open by the grace of God, so that in the whole gamut of our experiences, we cultivate, we practice the gift of letting go. Letting go. One of the great organizations which has done so much to humanize death is the hospice movement, which has brought death again from the clinical situation of the hospital to the warmth of the family and home. And I've learned much from the hospice people. Our own Margie Jewell, I met her in that situation as one of our own was breathing his last. And one of the things that I learned from hospice was that the loved ones often have to give the dying one permission to go, saying, it's all right now. You can let go. It is possible. I do believe. In spite of what struggle may come or suffering be experienced, it is possible even now to own our death, to cultivate the grace of letting go, in order that in the end, there might be peace. So come now and receive the mark of ashes as a sign of your mortality, and then the bread and the cup as a sign of life. Now, lived fully as Jesus lived it. For what could we better do than to live as he lived, and die as he died, with open hand? I speak of it as the grace of letting go. Because I speak tonight not about dogmas, not about intellectual ideas so much, as an experience, a deep experience, an experience of ashes, tangibly applied, of bread dipped and eaten, of the opening of ourselves to an experience of the Spirit, which is mystery. That, you see, is a grace. All is grace.